Now to dealing with imposter syndrome as it's known, that little voice that might tell you you are not good enough. Sometimes it's quite a loud voice. People of all ages and stages are affected by it, worried that they don't measure up and that it's just a matter of time till they're found out. Bex Bell has a PhD in criminal psychology, has always been fascinated by the human condition. She is the founder of Remix Coaching and Consulting, which includes working with people from all walks of life to optimise their potential. Part of that's finding practical solutions to deal with doubt. Her own struggles with the relentless mental chatter, making her second-guess her ability, led to her addressing this in a book called Inner Critic to Inner Coach. Bex, good morning. Welcome.
Good morning.
Thank you very much for having me here.
You're welcome. So what... how do you describe what has been dubbed imposter syndrome?
Yes, well, I think you described it beautifully, actually. It is that nagging sense of, you know, no matter how successful we are, no matter how many achievements we have, bits of praise, bits of good feedback, we just always feel like we're fluking our success. And there's that anxiety that's always niggling away at us that any second we're about to be found out. And understandably, that can create a lot of distress for us and can push us into some really problematic behaviours in an effort to try and manage that anxiety that might work for us in the short term, but actually lead to self-sabotage in the long term. And that's exactly what I've found in my journey of or my lifetime experience of feeling like an imposter too.
It's like you don't belong there. And it's funny because it's not necessarily logical. You can be looking at the same person sitting around the same table or on the same management team or whatever and know that they're actually full of large amounts of BS and are bluffing their way through everything. But that's fine for them. It's just them. But it's not fine for you to be more competent and yet feel like you don't deserve to be there. It's not a logical feeling, is it?
No, it's absolutely not. That's one of the key things about the imposter syndrome is it's that mismatch between the objective evidence, which suggests that actually you are very competent, you're very capable, you know what you're doing, but internally, subjectively speaking, you just don't feel as successful as you look on paper, which is why it can be really frustrating when I certainly found in my experience you'd share with people that you felt like this and they'd say things like, oh, you know, come on, Bex, just believe in yourself. And it's sort of like, well, I'm trying, but it's not working. You know, there's still that voice that's telling me I don't deserve to believe in myself. So it's very much that mismatch between what the evidence is saying and what everybody else can see, the value that everybody else can see in you, but how you feel inside yourself.
You just said something really important, you don't deserve. And I think this sometimes gets to the heart of it. And it's a particular challenge where you know full well that you are better at something than someone else, but they somehow deserve the position more than you. Is there a self-worth component to this, or is that the wrong word to use? It's probably an extremely complex psychology as to why this inflicts one person more than another. But at the heart of it, it's that you don't deserve it. It's not okay. You know, you shouldn't have it when all the logical evidence is to the contrary.
Yeah, I think what really sits at the heart of it in terms of our individual psychology is the beliefs that we have about competence. So Valerie Young has done some really important research. She has a wonderful book called The Secret Thoughts of Successful Women that I can't recommend enough for people to read. And she identified five underlying beliefs that can feed into this idea that we're an imposter. And these beliefs, I can tell you what they are if we've got time, but they essentially set us up with such unrealistically high standards of performance for ourselves that instantly, even if there's a successful outcome, we will discount that successful outcome because we rationalize that it wasn't good enough. You know, it wasn't perfect enough. I wasn't juggling everything flawlessly enough like actual competent people do. And so that can mean that we just have that sense of not deserving the successful outcome. We find it really hard to own it and internalize it. And therefore, we constantly feel like we're just fluking success. Whereas when we look at other people, it's much easier to think, oh, look, you know, they're doing so well. They did that perfectly. They're juggling everything flawlessly. They learned that thing quickly and easily, whereas it took me ages to learn and I struggled. So I think we have very different attributions, I guess, when we think about ourselves in comparison to others.
Hard on oneself. As I said, sometimes you can know the other person is frankly not up to it, but still they're allowed and you're not. Okay. I suspect, and we won't go too deeply into this, but I suspect a lot of this is rooted, as just about everything else in life is, in our early development and the early views we form of ourselves. And I say that only to mean that it means often we have to learn with things. We're not going to be able to go and undo that earliest wiring necessarily, but what we can do is learn to live with the way we're wired. Is that oversimplifying?
No, I think that's beautiful. You're exactly right that so much of this is shaped by our early messaging around what competence means and how we need to be in order to consider ourselves truly successful. And like anything, I don't think you can fully undo that learning, but you can absolutely, like you said, learn how to rewire it or create new pathways or new beliefs. And that is a big part of the book, is actually helping people to amend, what I call amend, any unhelpful beliefs that they have about competence. And by unhelpful, I mean that they're feeding into this, sort of maintaining this experience of feeling like an imposter. And we know from neuroscience that that is absolutely possible to learn new ways of thinking and behaving. And I find that really hopeful. And that is what I wanted to capture in the book, is that message that you can rewrite these things in order to rise above and kind of heal the negative impact of feeling like an imposter on your life.
You say rewrite. It is often a voice many of us hear. I'm interested if people have different ways of experiencing this, but we all know we have that internal voice. In my case, it's often several, that we are dealing with all day, every day. It is part of the makeup of the human being. That we experience life as story, as narrative, and we can be in control of whether we're letting that voice run riot negatively, or whether we override it and try and change what it is saying to us. Do you want to perhaps, this is a chance for you to go ahead and say the advice that you give to people on how to change that feedback that you're giving yourself?
Yeah, I think one of the really important things that I talk about in the book is not trying to stop the negative thoughts that come into your mind. So I think we get lots of advice about, you know, just think positive, and it sort of sends the message that we can't be successful until we completely eradicate the inner critic or delete it completely. But it is very normal for our mind to spit up negative thoughts like that. It's actually a protective thing. So it's your mind doing exactly what it's designed to do. So the goal is not to stop those thoughts from happening, but actually just to create space for them to be there, to not freak out when they show up, and to not interpret them instantly as a red flag that you're incompetent or can't do something. But it's actually just to accept and acknowledge, oh, okay, hey, this is my mind doing what it's designed to do. It's just my inner critic showing up. And I have absolute power to consciously choose how I respond to this. And one way that we can respond is by asking questions of ourselves, like, hang on a minute, if I listen to this voice and if I accept what it's saying as my truth, is it going to take me towards or away from the type of person I want to be? Is it going to take me towards or away from how I want to be living my life? If it is away and you'll be getting further away from who you want to be and how you want to live, then what's something else you might tell yourself instead? And that's when I talk about drawing on our inner coach. So if you imagine an inner critic kind of sitting on one shoulder, which is saying, hey, you suck and you're a not good enough imposter, on the other shoulder is your inner coach, which is always accessible to you. And it's that voice of encouragement and support and empowerment, and the voice that is actually going to help you do your best work and live your best life. So, you know, if while your inner critic might be saying you must be perfect or else you, you know, can't consider yourself competent, the inner coach might say something to you like, actually, how about we don't focus on being perfect? We just focus on giving it our best shot. If we screw it up, we're going to learn from it. And that is basically the point of this journey is learning. So you can just see the difference there in tuning into the inner coach whilst also giving your inner critic space to be there, because if we think that we need to get rid of it, we're almost setting ourselves up for disappointment because it's supposed to be there.
And that's important to discuss also. We humans are often, we're hardwired to see threat, And once upon a time, it was a physical threat. These days, often it is an emotional or other threat. And we are very tuned into those to protect ourselves. So when you accept that critic raising doubt about whether you worked hard enough at this or whether you're good enough at this, when you accept that that is part of your body's system to prepare you to be ready for something, is this where you can reframe it, Bex?
Absolutely. It just completely changes your relationship to it. So I talk about in the book sort of offering your inner critic kindness and compassion. So rather than thinking, oh God, you know, I'm having these critical thoughts again, and why is this voice still here? And I must actually be an imposter because it's still telling me I'm an imposter. Rather than beating yourself up about it, which basically makes us feel shame about this very important, necessary part of ourselves, why don't we just meet it with compassion instead? And in those moments when it shows up, it's about turning to that part of yourself, thanking it for its protection and how hard it has worked for you, in my case, literally my whole life, to try and protect me and keep me away from rejection or embarrassment, and actually say to this part of yourself, hey, look, I see that you're there. Thank you for showing up and trying to protect me. But at the same time, also putting some boundaries around it. So saying, look, I can take it from here. It's okay for you to relax your protection of me today. And then on you go, your merry way, doing whatever tasks or things you need to do with your day. And so it's not giving it complete permission to just take over your life, but it is just accepting that it's a part of you that you don't need to be ashamed of, and it doesn't have to call all the shots in your life.
Here's an example. You're sitting in your PJs in your UGG boots on the sofa on a Sunday afternoon, and your inner critic's going, you're lazy, you're a sloth, you could be doing this, you haven't prepared this, you haven't done that, or whatever. You can just say, thanks very much for the advice, but actually today this is what I'm going to do. I need this, I need a bit of a refill. I've got perfectly good plans ahead for everything I've got to do this week. So thanks very much, but no thanks. This is me today.
Exactly. That's right. And
not that I've ever said that to myself, but possibly I have.
Well, good on you. We have to, particularly for those of us who tend to feel like imposters, we also tend to overwork. So I think it's to try and sort of compensate for feeling like an imposter. So thanking your inner critic for its, you know, suggestion that you're a lazy sloth, but saying, actually, putting some boundaries around and saying, I actually need rest today and I'm just going to chill out, and tomorrow I will get back into action, is completely acceptable and what I would recommend. Some people say to me, but Bex, if we do that, won't we risk just being lazy though? You know,
it's fine to be lazy for a day. And this is where you have a kōrero with your inner critic. It's fine to recharge your batteries sometimes when you need to do it. It's, you know, fine to, I won't say that. I'll get a raft of criticism. It's fine to do these things sometimes as part of relaxing and being around a human being. But the point is, your inner critic, its purpose is to constantly alert you to threat. Your purpose is to calm it and say, hey, I've got this. Let's give another example, though, because often what happens with people is that they will turn down opportunities because they fear going through that experience, right? And it might be a speaking engagement. It might be applying for a job. It might be making a presentation at the meeting. And the fear of the way they're going to experience this actually stops them from taking the opportunity. Could you pick up on ways to handle that?
Yes, I think the most important, first of all, and like we talk about in the book, is just to notice what's going on. So, okay, it's my inner critic here. I also talk about ways to calm that in terms of the actual physiology. So if your heart is racing, if your breathing becomes shallow, you just hate the experience and the discomfort, we talk about things like breathing. We talk about self-soothing touch. So actually, you know, just a gentle hand on your chest that can actually help you feel calmer and sort of reduce that frazzle that's triggered by the inner critic. But another thing you can do that's really important is what I call holding on to your values. So it's about being very clear for yourself about what do I care about? How do I want to live my life? And therefore, why am I willing to actually lean into that discomfort? So an example for me would be doing this interview on the radio, right? It's scary. It's kind of uncomfortable. You don't want to screw it up and say anything silly on national radio. But my values are that I really care about helping people's lives go better. And so if I just pull back and don't do this radio interview, maybe I'm missing out on helping people to learn more about the imposter syndrome and to help themselves out with it. And so my value of wanting to contribute and be of service helps me to rise above the fear of being on the radio. It's still scary. I'm still nervous. My voice might still be shaking, but my values give me that positive emotional fuel to almost to feel the fear and do it anyway, essentially.
So COACH is the acronym we have here. Can we talk about the middle letter, A, amend unhelpful competence beliefs? And again, this is a different conversation that you can have with your inner critic, i.e. with yourself, which is to provide some evidence to contradict the warnings it's given you, the threats it's given you that you're not ready, you're not good enough, you're not this, you're not that. You can come back with some evidence to the contrary.
You can. And it's really about asking the question of, okay, this is the belief that I currently have about competence that is probably feeding my imposter experience. Is that belief still serving me? And if it's not, I can do something about it. So, for example, Valerie Young's research shows that a perfectionist belief is common in imposters. And this is the idea that competent people do everything perfectly. Therefore, if I make a mistake, I'm incompetent. And clearly, I'm an imposter. So it's asking the question of, okay, Bex, if I'm expecting myself to do everything perfectly, is that going to help or hinder my ability to perform? And usually the answer is hinder. So what can we think about instead? Maybe we can amend that belief to, hey, I don't actually have to do this perfectly. I just have to make the goal be about learning and actually embracing the process and letting go of the outcome. It's trying my best and enjoying the process of trying it. And that's a very different flavor to expecting yourself to be perfect. And it has a very different kind of emotional tone to it as well, whereby challenges become, rather than being a sort of scary threat, they actually become an exciting challenge and opportunity to learn. So that's an example of what we mean about amending unhelpful competence beliefs to be something more helpful and to create more helpful, uplifting standards of performance.
Could you share, Bex, a little of your own journey just to finish and the ups and downs of it? You mentioned that this particular focus of your work grew out of your own experiences. Could you give us an indication of what some of the turning points were?
Yeah, certainly. So, I mean, my experience dates right back. My earliest memory was when I was 5 years old at ballet. And again, by objective standards, I was pretty good at dancing, but I never felt like I fit in that world. I just felt like I was fluking it, that I only did well because I was sort of practicing harder and longer than anybody else. And that experience followed me right through my schooling. It was particularly strong at university, which made my PhD experience pretty gnarly. And it took me much longer than it needed to take. And I just remember one day my wonderful PhD supervisor sending me an article that was about the imposter syndrome. And she said, just so you know, you're not alone. And that really, it blew my mind that other people felt like this and that there was a name for it. And that was sort of the initial starting point of being interested in this topic. And from there, the big turning points for me have been in my coaching and speaking work is just coming across so many people who feel like this and feel hammered by it and held back by it. And that has just fueled my passion, really, of sharing whatever I can with people about how to manage it. And at the same time, I am walking that journey with people as well. It's still a daily thing that I manage myself. And it's cool that we can take the journey together.
Thank you, Bex, very much. Bex Bell is author of Inner Critic to Inner Coach, How to Heal the Imposter Syndrome and Self-Sabotage.